Good morning and welcome to Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. And we're also pleased to welcome to the show the man we like to call our chef in residence. His name is Doyle Moore. For a long time now, he's been stopping by on a regular basis, first Wednesday of the month at 10 o'clock, and we talk about food and cooking. And we always have a good time exchanging stories and recipes and cooking tips, sometimes picking a particular dish, and sometimes, as we're doing here this morning, to look at a style of cooking or a regional approach to cooking. And this morning, we'll be talking about something that we're just chatting here that we certainly have talked about before, but it's a kind of cooking that he really likes a lot. He has ties to the Southwest, has family who lives out there, visits there often, and this is a kind of cooking that he likes. And I think it's fair to say that of all of the regional styles of cooking, and to the extent that America has regional styles, and we do, I think this is probably one of the most popular. At least you can get something that's sort of like this probably almost anywhere. And it may not be the best. It may not be true, but you can get something approaching it probably almost any place in the country. So there are tastes there that obviously we like. Mm. Southwestern cooking, that's what we're talking about here this morning. Questions are welcome. Recipes are welcome. All you got to do is pick up the telephone and dial the number, and we'll be very happy to talk with you. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Welcome back.
Yes, thank you very much.
So you were yourself not all that long ago out in the West.
Let's see.
He's looking at his watch now.
I've been back 4 days.
Okay.
So it's still fresh in my mind where I was and what I was doing. So, no, it hasn't been a long time. Although I hadn't been there for 2 years, and it made me very, very unhappy because I missed last year. This time I said, September, goodbye world. I'm going to Wyoming and stay there all September. All of September. Yes, all of September. And I did it.
Well, how was it? Was it really hot?
No.
There?
Okay. Oh, no.
Well, in some parts of the West, it was actually, it's been quite warm. I'm thinking maybe sort of the central Great Plains, maybe that's where it was really.
Well, yeah, Kansas. Well, Kansas
yeah,
was a
places
little hot.
Like that.
Oh, no, as you go up, I was up 6,000 feet.
Oh, okay. So,
and
okay.
So yeah. I left, I remember leaving Lincoln, Nebraska. It was, when I left Champaign, it was 85. And then I got to Lincoln, and it was down to, it was low 80s. Low 80s at Lincoln, and by the time I got 500 miles farther, it was 55 and raining.
Well, 55 is okay. I'm not sure about the rain, but the 55, that's okay.
It was pretty nice.
Yeah,
it was
yeah.
pretty nice. And so then it stayed that way for quite some time, and there was actually even snow 30 miles away.
Jason Croft says he'd like to have you closer to the microphone, so either you pull it towards you. There you go. What a pro. Very good.
That's better.
Thank you very much, Mr. Director, and thank you, Mr. Guest. So if I asked you this question, like, I know we have in the cooking here, we have different influences.
Mm-hmm.
We have influences from Native American tradition. We have influences from Mexico. What is there something that is a key taste or a key feature or a key ingredient here that's important enough so you would say, well, yes, this is the kind of thing that we're using a lot. You can't get along without this thing or this couple of things.
Probably, and it seems so plain, but New Mexico cooking, which is what I'm really thinking of, don't ask me why I learned it all in Wyoming, but that's where I've got the major part of my recipes are Wyoming. Large number of people cook New Mexico style in Wyoming. Well, a lot of them came up from Mexico, Arizona into Wyoming, and so they brought that with them. Probably the major object that is used more than anything else is the chili pepper, but the chili peppers that are grown locally, they're not chili peppers that are imported, and they're not funny hot ones and funny something else. But New Mexico developed then making a chili pepper that was unique to the country. And also, since New Mexico is high, I have a fondness. I have a fondness for the peppers that are grown up high in the. I can't say in the mountains, but high rather than those that are low from the desert. I'm afraid I prejudge, but then I'm sorry because I'm talking about Hatch. Mm-hmm. Hatch mm-hmm. is in Arizona, and Hatch is out on the flat, really hot desert, and they grow a very good chili pepper there. But I don't like it as well as I like the ones from the mountain areas.
And this is something that I'm sure chili pepper connoisseurs would appreciate. And
fight
some people
over.
Would say that, you know, chili is just a ground hot chili is just it's just hot.
But it's
but they're
not.
Very
it's
but
not
there are a lot of different kinds of them, different varieties, and they have different not only do they have different levels of heat, but they also have different flavors and different qualities.
Different
so they're
flavors.
Really different.
Oh yes, yes.
They are really different.
It is. And connoisseurship, of course everyone wants to be a connoisseur, I guess. But the old folks were vehement about what chilies. Oh, I wouldn't use this. I only use that. And so that still continues, and then it continues even with me. I am a Shimayo fan, and that is from the north. That's from north of Santa Fe, and it's a little higher in the mountains. And so Shimayo chili is just a different flavor. And when you're using a cup and a half of chili powder for a little Colorado chili sauce, you kind of want to have one that you like.
I guess a cup and a half.
Can you believe
that's
a cup?
I'm finding that kind of hard to believe. A cup and a half.
That's what you have chili. To do if you're going to make a enchilada. It's a cup and a half. A cup and a half of red chili pepper and water. And a little bit of cumin, a little bit of oregano, a little bit of garlic, and maybe a little bit of salt. And I don't know if you put salt in that particular bit or not. You then cook it until it thickens just a little bit, and then that's the napping sauce for an enchilada. And that is one of the major tastes that you get in Southwest. Then there are other things. And at Rancho de Shimayo, they have a special recipe for cooking pork chops in nothing but red pepper, a red pepper sauce. And it's very hot. It's, I think, carne adobo, an adobo sauce. Mm-hmm. And you know, here we barely go out and get the smallest bottle or the smallest jar of red peppers and you very carefully put it, or else you buy the crushed red peppers and you sprinkle it all over pizza. And that's about as far as Midwestern cooking goes. But yes, a cup and a half of good fresh, and you want it fresh. And I would wish that you could buy it in jars and bottles a little easier, but it's not you. So I get when I need it in town, I get it in bulk, wherever I can get it. Hmm. So, but then generally, there's some waiting for me in Wyoming, which was why I was anxious to get out there after 2 years instead of one.
We have a caller here to
yes.
bring in. Let's do that in Belgium. Not the country, but the place over there by Danville. Line number 4. Hello.
Good morning.
Hello there.
Nice to hear you back, Mr. Inge.
Thank you.
missed you dearly. Mr. Moore, in your travels to Wyoming, do you ever
yes.
stop in Buffalo? In Buffalo, there's a place called the Occidental Hotel, which was built way back in Gold Rush days or something way back there. And it's still in its old state with the old bar and everything like that, old rooms, everything.
Isn't that north of Cheyenne?
Actually, it's south of Cheyenne.
South of Cheyenne.
South of Cheyenne, right on, what's that, 25 there that goes up. Right there at Ten Sleep Canyon that goes over the Bighorns.
Oh, yeah. Oh, all right. I know where you're speaking.
Yes. excellent, excellent restaurant there that has a lot of Southwestern food like that. That's right in the hotel, 5-star. Just so you, if you go to Sheridan, that's a little bit different. Cheyenne is farther to the east.
To the east, yes.
To the north.
North.
And just a beautiful place right there at the mountains. But they have a lot of very good Southwest food there. I know. Wondered if that's where you went, but I guess it's not.
Well, no, it isn't. I spent most of my time in Cheyenne and a little bit, maybe a little bit north and a little bit west of Cheyenne.
Yeah, and you just barely got into Wyoming then.
Well, yes, it's true. But that's where family is, so yeah. I stayed with them.
Yeah. Well, take care then.
Yes,
well,
thank you.
Thanks for the call. Other calls are welcome. Maybe you have a recipe to share or something else. We just want to call and say hi, and that's fine. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. And this is our monthly cooking program. Doyle Morris here, as he has been for a long time, on the first Wednesday of the month. And he picked the topics, and he said this time around he thought he'd like to talk about Southwestern cooking. And you can do that too. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. We have another call here, somebody from over in Vermilion County, so let us talk with them. They're on the toll-free line, line 4.
Good morning.
Hi.
I'm a longtime listener and have actually heard you discuss the topics of chilies in a past show.
Yes.
And remembered that you had said that you loved to get your chili out when you were in New Mexico.
Yes.
So when I was out there on a trip this February, I popped into a grocery store to look for chili powder.
Uh-huh.
And they had bags hanging on a rack of various spices.
Oh, yes. So
I asked a shopper, what brand do you buy? And she pointed to a brand that said Shimayo.
Yes.
Across the top. So I bought a bag.
Good for you.
And brought it home, put it in a jar, and I have not yet used it.
Oh, shame.
So tell me, do I just substitute it spoon for spoon in my standard chili recipes, or what would you do with it?
Well, first you have to realize what it is that you got.
It's red. That's
well, yeah, yes, exactly. It is only ground chili, you know, the ground pepper.
Mm.
And so some of your recipes will call for chili powder, you know.
Well, this, I think, may be a mixture. I'm not positive.
No, it isn't. No, it would not be a mixture.
Okay.
They would not make a mixture of that for you. But you can buy, when you buy a can that says chili powder, then you're getting ground chilies, cumin, oregano and garlic,
right?
And that's what makes chili powder. Now the chili that you've got, which has a absolutely magnificent flavor, you use that. But then you want to temper those other tastes along with it. Let's see. As a matter of fact, I have something right here in front of me that I would tell you: 2 tablespoons of chili and 1 teaspoon of cumin, ground cumin, and 1 teaspoon of oregano, salt and pepper, and 1 teaspoon of garlic powder. I argued about whether to put powder in or the real garlic, but that is part of the recipe that I have that you would in how you would use the fresh chili that you got. But you got one of the best. I think there are some others. I do feel sorry for the people in Hatch because they got flooded out this year. I don't ever remember that happening. How can you flood on a hot desert? But they got rained out, completely rained out, and so their crop is really poor and down and not hardly available. But so anyway, that's what I would use. Don't just say if it says put in some chili powder, don't just dump only that in. You add other stuff with it.
Two tablespoons of the chili and 1 teaspoon of the others.
And 1 teaspoon of cumin and oregano, yes, and a tablespoon of garlic powder. And then that'll give you a good combination of flavors that equates the ready-made packaged chili powder. But Mother only used chili powder. She got Mexican chili powder. Anything she made took a whole bottle. I remember that. So it is a usable product, but you have to know what you're doing.
Okay. Do you have time for me to ask another question?
Yes, indeed.
A friend gave me two red chili plants this spring, which are gorgeous in the garden. Each chili has turned red, and it's about the size of your little finger.
Yes.
What do I do with them?
Pick them off and dry them.
Whole?
Yes, whole. Don't do anything. You can, if you want, you can take a needle and a thread and pierce through the stem and have a little garland of chili peppers. But let them dry thoroughly, and then when you use them, put on rubber gloves, break them open, empty the seeds out, and then you can take the skin or take the rest of it. If the seeds are dry, you can shake them out, and put the rest of that chili pod into some warm water and let it soften up, and then put that in your blender, and you'll have the equivalent of the enchilada sauce, which is a lot of chili, but the veins and the seeds are what's really, really hot in a chili. So don't be afraid of it. You can break it up, as I say, and put it on pizza if you want. But
to make enchilada sauce, I would take a bunch of dried ones, clean
yes,
them as you said,
clean
and
them.
Just use the blenderized
yes,
spray?
Yes, yes. That would do it, because you're going to end up with what you get if you make it out of. It might not be as smooth as usual, but because the ground powder makes a very smooth enchilada sauce.
Thank you.
Mm.
All right. Well, thanks for the call. Others are welcome. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. The kind of chili, the shamayo that you really like, mm-hmm. how hot is that on the hotness scale?
Oh, boy, I can't. Not really hot. But that thing that you ask about, there is just an additional ambiance to that particular. Oh, you can smell it. You open up the jar, you can smell that difference right away. Mm. It is different, and it is good. Don't think of New Mexican cooking or Southwest cooking as being hot laden, because it's not. It's flavor laden, and so it isn't really hot. And besides that, when you cook hot peppers, they mild down. So that's why you're going to want to cook the enchilada sauce anyway, because it takes that and it pulls it down just a little bit. So and it isn't meant to be killer hot. And you know, people, the chili heads. The hotter the better. Oh, more habaneros and more. It's very peculiar to watch. Making cowboy chili is a totally different experience from what I'm talking about.
And that I don't get that. This competition among some people to see
how hot
can you
yes.
can you stand?
Yes.
This makes no sense
no.
to me at all. Particularly if you're cooking something and it has good flavor in it. To just blast your taste buds so that you can't taste anything, this makes no sense.
Well, two things I want to pull in here at this particular point. Eating a teaspoon of cayenne pepper is good for your system, and it does not cause ulcers. In fact, in some instances, it has cured the ulcers. Having cayenne pepper every day. Now, cayenne is not a red chili. It is a red chili, but
it's a different.
It's over here in this hotter.
It's a cousin.
Yes.
Yeah.
And number two, capsicum oil, which is what you're responding to in the heat and the taste of the hot chili. Actually, you not only get used to it, but you do crave hotter. You oh, that was good. Can I have and it almost it isn't a drug, but it acts in a stimulant way that makes you want it to be hotter. So these folks that are eating real hot only want hotter.
Yeah.
I mean, hotter than they're even eating
if
at
you
the
build,
moment.
You can build up tolerance.
You build it up, and it does increase. So it's a very curious thing. The Koreans put chili peppers in their shoes, and it keeps their feet warm in the winter. And they also have a pad around the middle. And they will poke chili peppers in that pad around their stomach, and that keeps the bowels warm. Mm. It's a curious thing where you use it as a topical heat. So it works.
Shall we talk with some other folks?
Well, yes, indeed.
All right, we have somebody here on a cell phone in Champaign. They're line one. Hello.
Good morning. How are you today?
Good.
I am. A little bit embarrassed about this, but if we could pretend that Piccalilli is kind of southwestern, you spoke about it last.
Yes, indeed, I did.
And I have a bunch of green tomatoes. There's no way in heck they're ever going to make it to full ripeness.
No, that's exactly what you use.
And if you could tell me where you found a recipe for that darn thing, I would much appreciate it.
Let's see. Well, I had a book of pickling of pick. Oh, somebody told us about a book of pickle. Wasn't it a book of pickles? Wasn't that the name of it?
I might have written it down, but I would have to go and dig out the schedule from that day.
My suggestion would, let's see, since these are kind of in the first place. Piccalilli and chow chow and that are really more southern than they are Midwestern. And so you might find it in southern cookbooks. I don't think that not the fancy gourmet cookbooks, but then there are a lot that go to Google and Epicurious. Epicurious had.
It was either that, because when we were doing the show,
yes.
I looked up and I think I found at least one recipe, and I'm not sure if it was from the Epicurious site or I might have just done a shotgun search by putting in the search engine, just put in southern cooking.
Yes.
Okay.
Because I think eventually we did come up with at least one recipe for chow chow and one for Piccalilli.
And one for Piccalilli.
Now, Harriet Williamson, our producer here, has just walked into the studio, and she has a cookbook in her hand, and it's The Joy of Pickling.
Oh, that's it, The Joy of Pickling.
And here is a recipe for Piccalilli. And this is, this must have been the book that we were talking about.
Yes.
The title of the book is The Joy of Pickling.
Pickling, okay.
And the author is Linda Ziedrich, and that's spelled Ziedrich. And this is a paperback. It's published by the Harvard Common Press. And indeed, there is a Piccalilli recipe here. Calls for chopped green tomatoes, cabbage, bell pepper, onion, salt, vinegar, sugar, mustard seeds, horseradish, garlic, hot pepper flakes, French ginger. And I'm sure I would bet you could find it in a bookstore or in the library, and probably, maybe some other recipes in there you would like. But it's all pickles.
It's all pickles. That was it.
Yeah,
The Joy of Pickling.
Great. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Sure thing.
Have a great day.
Very good. Thank you. And thanks to Harriet Williamson. See, I was figuring somebody would be listening and would come in and bring us the
I didn't get that book yet. I should have. It looks to me like somebody just bought that after our last program.
Well, it could be. It could be that she did, or it could be that we. I think that actually Celeste on the Afternoon Magazine had Linda Ziedrich as a guest.
Oh.
So maybe this is just in our vast AM 580 Focus Afternoon Magazine library. And that was, and Harriet knew that we had it and just pulled it off the shelf. We are a little bit past the midpoint here. We're doing our monthly program on food. We do it each month, the first Wednesday, 10 o'clock, with the man we like to call our chef in residence, Doyle Moore. We pick some dish sometimes to talk about. In this particular case, we're talking about a regional style of cooking, and questions are welcome, recipes are welcome, whatever's on your mind, give us a call. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. We have someone here on a cell phone who is somewhere near Muhammad, and this is line two. Hello.
Hi. I guess I'm calling in defense of Chili Heads and to correct a number of things that you said that weren't quite right, and also to give some shopping suggestions for people in the Champaign-Urbana
area. Oh, yes.
I eat habaneros, peppers, whole and raw, so I have a very... I like hot food. The first thing I wanted to note is this. As you eat chili, particularly if you eat habaneros, what people need to remember is that different chilies have completely different tastes. It's not a matter of just heat. If you eat a habaneros from Jamaica, it's completely different than a habaneros from another area in the Southwest. And when you eat chili, you don't want to eat it hotter and hotter. What you need to do is you need to eat a piece of chili or eat something that's very spicy and wait, and then you'll be able to have some more. If you eat it, the faster you eat it, the hotter it gets until it's almost unbearable. What you do if you're in an Indian restaurant and you want hot something hot, you don't get the curry. Curry is very special. What you get is vindaloo, which is a very, very hot, non-curried dish. And they always serve it with raita, R-A-I-T-A. And what that is yogurt and cucumbers. Because the thing that cuts down on spice in peppers, chili peppers, is fat. Take, for example, take a piece of bread, piece of toast, cracker, put cream cheese on it, and then put directly on it a very hot sauce. And what you'll find is you get a really nice, sharp taste that goes away instantly. So, while a lot of people who eat chili like beer, the beer is always good. I recommend that for everyone.
No, it won't get any argument on that one, no.
But if you want to cool off, make sure you have milk around.
Yes.
Or cream cheese. Now for some suggestions. For people who want to make chili and don't want to go to all the trouble of making it, I just wanted to mention that the guy, I can't remember his name, the person who makes Tabasco sauce,
McElhenney? McElhenney?
Something like that.
Yeah.
First of all, they make one now with habanero sauce, habanero peppers, and it's extremely good, and it's much, much hotter. They also make a sauce that you can buy, and I guess I'll mention names because I know where these places are, at Art Mart, a spicy chili sauce. And all you have to do is add meat if you want meat and add beans, and it takes about 10 minutes, and it's really good, and you can just, you know, slice up some habaneros and keep it on the side and throw it in if you want to eat it. I have to do that because my wife can't eat habaneros. If you really want hot chilies, other than habaneros, because as I said, habaneros have a very particular taste. If you look at hot sauces with habaneros, they use carrots and they use vinegar. In fact, everything with a hot sauce uses vinegar. And if you really want them hot, what you really want is probably a Thai chili. The Thai chilies are those very, little, very small ones.
Little tiny ones,
very
yes.
thin. You get those. I used to get them all the time at Amco. And you get them in various other Asian places. And there's a lot of ways to eat very, very hot food that doesn't distract from what you're eating. The best eating experience I ever had was in Las Vegas, where they served a roast duck with a habaneros peach glaze. And it was amazing because you could taste the peach.
Yes.
And it's a matter of, I have a book on cooking chilies, and as they said at the beginning, any idiot can make something so hot that you can't eat it.
Right.
And that's not what cooking chili is all about.
No, you're absolutely right.
So I just wanted to point out that eat chilies are unique, Oh, and Julia Child was wrong. They don't mean their taste buds. And I do want to point out for people who have acid reflux, which is everybody, isn't it, that eating a chili will not increase your acid reflux at all.
Nope.
The only thing it'll do is if you get acid reflux, you know, a little gurgling up in your throat, and you've eaten a chili, then you get hit with it again.
Yes.
But it didn't cause it. So you shouldn't worry about that. But I have never found Mexican food to be particularly hot, and they don't really use hot sauces.
No, they don't.
And which is always surprising in what they think is hot. I have to carry my own. What I do is I go to World Market, and I buy dried habaneros chilies, and I pound them. And then I take a jar of hot pepper flakes, red pepper flakes. They shouldn't be called hot pepper flakes. And I finish that off. They're already gone. And I fill that with my own habaneros chili flakes. And that's what I put on my pizza.
Dry.
It's dried, yeah. It's dried. Yeah. So it's really nice. You can just actually crumble it with your hands. And so for people who don't find red pepper flakes hot enough or don't get that flavor, then they want it. And in fact, one thing you'll find is that when people get older, they actually, in a way, need more spice in their food because
yes.
of the taste buds.
Yes.
So, and you're absolutely right. It does have health benefits, and that's well known. So anyway, I just wanted to say that.
Well, and good. Thank you.
I do find it hilarious because I've had friends come over, and they get into a very, usually it's a guy, macho thing. And
yes.
I happen to just have, I eat very hot chili. I don't think it's, you know, macho. It doesn't make me macho.
No.
But they tend to think they're going to try to do a matching.
Yes.
And then that's really funny because they usually fall on the floor. And the last thing, let me just mention, I'll give other people some time. When you talk about having heat, it's really interesting. Different kinds of spices react in a totally different way. Peppers will hit you on your lips and on the back of your throat. If you take wasabi, which is a spice, it's not horseradish from Japan, even though they call it that. That basically goes right up to the top of your head and clears your sinuses. And other kinds of hot spices go to different parts of your body before you feel the heat. So there's actually a whole, what shall we say, there's a whole culture of chilies. It's not just one thing that you use basically to burn everything out. So that's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
All right, thank you for the call.
Yes, he's right. It modifies what you're eating. It isn't the thing in itself. It is a modifier of what you're eating.
Well, I guess what I was thinking about is when I was talking about people, you know, getting crazy about heat was this thing about there, who can stand the hottest?
Yes, yes. You know, well, as he pointed out, his guests think that that's a macho thing to do, and they really don't know how to handle it.
And I guess, you know, myself personally, I do like some level of heat, but there, you know, for me, maybe I'm just a wimp. But you know, I like it sort of on the mild to medium side.
I don't want to get too intense.
Well, that just illustrates just how passionate some people are about this subject.
Well,
obviously,
it's absolutely
and what the caller said, it was about chilies, different chilies actually having different flavors, is absolutely true. And we really said that at the beginning. So it's not all just about heat, and they're not all the same and different even. I'm sure if you take the same variety of chili and you grow it
in different places. Yes, yes.
The result is going to be
indeed.
Is going to be
indeed.
Different. So
that's exactly what it is. That's why I choose where mine's grown.
That's why you're like this particular one that comes from a particular geographic place. All right. Let's talk with somebody again on cell phone. This is line 3. Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, hi.
I'm the Joy of Pickling fan who called last month, but you've already figured it out.
Oh, great.
Oh, yeah.
But I will recommend to the guy with all the green tomatoes a recipe in there for curried green tomato pickles that's really good as a side with Indian food. And
oh, I'll bet that
really
is.
Good alone.
Curried green tomatoes.
Curried green tomato pickles. And there are a lot of other ideas in the book for green tomatoes, and I know we're all going to have bushels and bushels of them this year. The tomatoes did not ripen in August. What I'm calling about is, does anybody, your listeners or either of you, know a source, a local source for fresh culantro?
Wait.
Not cilantro, but culantro. C-U-L-A-N-T-R-O.
I have no idea in the
world.
I don't
know what that is.
What culantro is.
It's a...
culantro.
It's got other names, Mexican cilantro, false cilantro. There's a Southeast Asian name for it, but that I don't know of. It's got a bunch of names. It's real used, real popular in Caribbean and Puerto Rican cooking.
Oh.
It tastes like cilantro times 10. It's really delicious. You can buy it in Houston.
Oh.
I buy it when I go there, but I've never found, I've been trying to find it around here. I've found the source. The seeds are rare to find, but I found a source of them on the net, but sounds like it's pretty hard to grow. So maybe somebody will call in. And
or maybe you will have inspired that. Someone to have it for next year.
Oh, it's wonderful stuff. You just you have to try it.
Well, culantro.
Culantro.
Well, that's a new piece of information for me. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for the call.
Thanks.
Well, here, yes, now I'm just pulled it into my search engine here, and what it says is that cilantro, however you want to pronounce it, it's a biennial herb. It's indigenous to continental tropical America and the West Indies, widely used in dishes throughout the Caribbean, Latin America, and Far East. It's relatively unknown in the U.S. and many other parts of the world and is often mistaken and misnamed for its close relative cilantro or coriander.
Yes.
And it also talks about some of the different things that it is called. Well, I guess, I don't know, perhaps if it's used in Asian cooking, you might look at some of the Asian markets that we have around and see if maybe you could find it there. But if it's something that you're looking for fresh, I don't know if that how easy it would be to find something like that. It's here's the source here for seeds. I suppose people can try growing it themselves, I guess, next year. But I have never heard of this thing.
I've not heard of it.
No.
Well, then we fit the other category. Hardly known in the USA.
I guess. Here's another thing. It says it's used in Caribbean cooking. Puerto Rico uses it extensively in all kinds of stews, soups, beans, etc. It is a more flavorful substitute for cilantro for all your culinary creations. Mm. And it says here it's definitely not easy to come by the seeds for this fragrant herb until now. And so it says here, here's a place where you can order them. So, well, there you go. You never can tell what people are going to call and ask about here on this show.
I think I would do the seed route if I wanted to make sure I got it. I'd try to grow the seeds.
All right. We have about 15 minutes left. Mm. You want to give a recipe? We haven't really.
No, I've enjoyed listening to people
having a good
talk
time
about
here.
This. I will share a recipe that maybe everyone thinks that they know, but I find that in all the years that I have been trying to cook this dish, I have always made a mistake, a grave error, and so I came up with a recipe from my family in Wyoming for tamale pie. Now, that's that stuff that you used to get in the high school cafeteria line. And, of course, I always enjoyed it. It tasted good. But I have failed to make it over and over and over again. And the reason that I have failed to make it is that I always used old chili. I thought that was something that was sort of a leftover dish in a casserole. And you used the chili that you'd had for supper a couple of nights before, and you made tamale pie out of it. Well, here is, I think, the definitive way of making it. It is so plain and so simple and so terribly good, I wanted to share it with you. Chop up an onion and saute the chopped onions in oil and add 1 pound, not too much, 1 pound of ground beef and saute that until it's brown. Then into that beef and onion mixture, you add 2 tablespoons of chili, ground chili, and 1 teaspoon of cumin, ground cumin, and oregano I put in the leaf style. I don't get a ground one. Salt and pepper, and a tablespoon of garlic powder. And then you add 1 can of diced tomatoes. Now that cooks and cooks and cooks, and that is such a that's not a weird combination. But you see, it's not what chili is made of. Chili has other things added to it, and that cooks until all the moisture disappears, and you end up with kind of a dry meat that is enhanced with the tomatoes and has quite a bit. I mean, that's almost a quarter. It's almost a quarter a cup of powders and such things, which is quite a bit. And then there was an argument as to whether you would add either frozen corn or a can of niblets, which I'm fond of, and black olives. And one of my friends said yesterday, if he didn't say that, don't put it in. I said, okay, do what you want. Then you cook cornmeal mush, 3 cups of water and 1 cup of cornmeal, with an extra cup of water that you mix it up, and you stir it and boil it until it's thick, and you let it get cool. It doesn't take more than about 10 minutes to cook that, and then you let it cool. You line a casserole, the bottoms and the sides. When it's cool, it becomes kind of like clay, and you can mold it up, and you mold it up the sides of a casserole dish. And you've got that on all four sides and the bottom, the cooled mush, and fill it with that meat mixture. You see, the meat mixture has the tomatoes and the chilies and all those flavors, and that's really all that it is that elaborate meat mixture. And then take the remainder of the mush and drop it in spoonfuls on top. So it's kind of like a cobbler where you have these lumps on top of it and some little holes that would allow it to steam, and bake it for an hour at least at 350, and check to see that the crust is browning, because you want that mush to have just a little bit of brown to it. It is so simple and straightforward, and when I ate it, I recognized the taste. That's it. So I now have a tamale pie, which I am going to make. In fact, I'm going to make it tomorrow, and I'm excited about it because I did make it, so I know that this is what it is and how it works and what I want from it. So that was I felt pleased that after however many years, at last I have a recipe I've been looking for.
It's another childhood experience you've been on the hunt for. I don't know.
Absolutely. But you see, I don't remember Mother ever making it. Although she made chili, she never made a tamale pie. And it was something that I would look forward to at the cafeteria, the school cafeteria. I think the best I ever had was in Denver. So I remember that an eighth grader in Denver. Oh, boy. So tamale pie. As simple as it sounds, that's all there is to it.
And there was some controversy about what you wanted to that was pretty funny. It was some controversy about what you wanted to put. There was something you wanted to
in
it, and your source said,
"No,
no, you don't put that in there."
Well, his response was, "Where do you think they got ripe olives in New Mexico?
They don't grow
in
olives.
1733.
They don't grow olives.
They don't
in
grow
New Mexico.
Olives. They have corn, but they don't grow olives. Yeah, but that's kind of. I remember there was a time that I never ate." I remember when I first ate a ripe olive, and it was very late in life, and it was only in California. I mean, can you believe that ripe olives existed in California years and years and years before it ever came to the shelves of central Kansas? Ripe olives. And, of course, now we use them for a lot of things. Yeah. They aren't particularly swell, but they're so pretty.
Well,
there's not much flavor. They're
well, I know if you picked an olive off an olive tree and ate it, you'd be real unhappy.
Oh, you'd be very unhappy.
It would be terrible.
No, it's got to be brined.
The thing maybe partly of what we appreciated is about what happens to it when you brine it and maybe add some little herbal component or something like that to it. Let's talk about somebody else here before we end up out of time.
Yes.
Somebody else in Belgium. This is line 4. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, I'm the other guy from Belgium.
You're the other, that's what, I almost said that, but no, I don't want to say
yeah.
The other guy from Belgium, yeah.
I was curious, how do you make refried beans? With which beans? I mean...
All right, I'll try to...
Is one better than the other beans?
Oh, yes. In fact, there's almost... Well, there may be... I don't know anyone that refries black beans.
Okay.
But black beans are the alternative to the pintos. And the pinto bean is that strange little bean that is multicolored that turns brown when you cook it. And you cook the pinto beans slowly... In one day you cook them slowly, and you don't necessarily have to put a lot of extra meat or other stuff with it, and a limited amount of salt and pepper. But it's then going to let them cool, and then I think I would drain the juice off of it. You don't want it too juicy. Drain the juice off of it and mash them with a potato masher or whatever you have that you would mash them up with. And then, unfortunately, it takes a lot of and the best you could make, I'm sorry, is made with lard. You have a goodly amount of lard, maybe 3 or 4 tablespoons,
really?
Of lard, and then you fry that mushed mixture in an iron skillet. You keep turning it so it doesn't burn or crust or anything, and that's what a refried bean is.
Okay.
And it's very easy to make, and it's very fast to make.
It sounds like, but I suppose you can't be surprised about the lard.
That's
what they used a long time ago.
Exactly. And that makes indeed the best.
Yeah.
However, you might want to use a vegetable oil, and it'll be a good taste, because the heating up or the recooking of that bean is what changes the flavor just a little bit. It won't taste like the boiled beans that you started with, because it takes on a little bit of character when it heats up and changes just a little bit chemically somehow. So it's a very simple dish to make. Every time you find a recipe or something about it, they always apologize for the fact that these aren't refried, because they're not fried first,
right,
so they aren't refried.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so the translation of what is it, frijoles frito?
Refritos.
Refritos, yes, is not exactly refried beans, but...
Double cooked.
Good for you. Good for you. Beans double cooked. That'll take care of it.
Thank you very much.
Enjoy them.
Thank you. Let's talk with someone in Mattoon here. Line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm awfully sorry I missed most of the show, but I just tuned in when your buddy was talking about cornmeal mush and chili, and I thought, oh, that sounds like tamale pie.
It
I've
is.
I've been looking for that recipe for years. I used to make it. And I used to take it to, you know, church supper.
Oh, yes,
like
yes.
That. And it was so good. And some way, over the years, I've lost it. And I wondered, I understand the you know, the mush and the chili thing, but do you put beans in your...
No, no.
Oh, well, that's what I wanted to know.
No, it's ground beef and onions that you've sautéed, and the chili powder, cumin, oregano, and garlic, and tomatoes.
And some
tomatoes. Can of tomatoes.
Okay.
And you cook all of that for, maybe 10 or 15 minutes until the moisture sort of disappears. And that's all you put in and cover it up with the cornmeal mush.
With the cornmeal mush.
Yeah.
You said bake it about an hour.
An hour, yes.
Yeah.
And, of course, I was baking in the mountains, so it might take longer or less, or I don't know what it
is. Well, I'm just on a small hill here.
The altitude is not going to be a factor.
Do it at 350, because that'll crust it up.
Well,
and
I'm delighted.
doesn't make any difference whether you use white cornmeal or yellow cornmeal.
Well, I'm a white cornmeal.
Well,
man.
That's what I was using when I made this.
Uh-huh.
So you see, it's very simple, and it isn't leftover chili. I used to make it with cornbread. I'd put cornbread on the bottom and then put this old chili in, and it wasn't good.
It isn't the same. No.
And, you will find this a treat.
Well, great.
And just remember, it's chili, ground chili.
Yeah.
And ground cumin,
uh-huh.
And oregano and garlic.
Okay, the garlic I had forgotten.
Yes, that's something.
Yeah.
I'm glad to re-inspire you because it's exactly the way I feel.
Well, me too. And it's I tell you, it's getting to be that time of year.
It is indeed.
When we think about things like that, I do enjoy your show.
Now,
thank you so
don't
much.
Forget, you could put in some corn and some black olives.
Well, I don't believe I will. The first time, anyway.
Okay.
All right. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Bye.
Well, at that, we're going to have to roll up the sidewalk here for
I'm
this
sorry.
Focus.
I'm sorry.
With our thanks to all the people who called in.
I guess all good things have to come to an end.
Yeah. Well, he'll be back.
Oh, I will.
Next month.
Yep.
First Wednesday, we'll do it again, some other topic. In the meantime, we want to say thanks to the man we like to call our chef in residence, Doyle Moore. First Wednesday of the month, 10 o'clock, he's here. We'll talk about cooking, and we'll do something else next month. That'll be November.
It'll be November already.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you.